Good morning, everybody. Well, today is the last lecture that I'm giving on the meaning of the Bodhisattva ceremony. I think I've given, 15 lectures at this point. So we're doing the last of the precepts. Number 10, I vow not to abuse or disparage the three treasures. So I vow not to misuse or to disparage or to indicate that the three treasures are of little worth. And the verse for this section is, to expound the Dharma with this body is foremost. The virtue returns to the ocean of reality. It is unfathomable. We just accept it with respect and gratitude. So let's take a look at what it means to say, I vow not to abuse the three treasures. So now I want to talk exactly what are the three treasures, or sometimes called the triple gem, or the three jewels of Buddhism. So in Sanskrit, they're called the three ritna jewels. And in Japanese, it's the Itai Sanbo, one body, three treasures. So they are the Buddha Dharma Sangha, which I know many of you, I would say everybody listening, is already familiar with. So Buddha can refer to the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, our Buddhist ancestors, the masters, Zen masters, and teachers, or the bodhisattvas, or even Buddha nature itself, reality itself, as the essential altruistic functioning of the world. And don't forget that in our teachings, you too, all of us, are the nature of a Buddha. So we are Buddhas when we are manifesting an actualized response. And when we're not, we're still Buddhas. We're just not functioning through and expressing our true nature. The second Dharma usually means the teachings themselves, the sutras. But it is also our practice. How we practice is how the Dharma is manifest. It is the whole of reality, the Dharma Kaya. It is what is realized. This is what is expressed when our response is one of actualized response. We could also say our problems are the Dharma, because it is our problems that prompt us to practice. And then the third is the Sangha, which in its narrowest view refers to ordained Theravada monks originally, a community of monks and nuns. We talk about Sangha as our particular congregation, if you will. Our Sangha is our family. But we can talk about any group as Sangha, including the whole ultimate all of reality itself. All being, all beings, as the world's existence, as Sangha. We say about the three treasures that they are called realized action through the Buddha, the truth, the Dharma, and harmony, Sangha. Taken together, this is our practice home. Taken together, this is Buddhist practice. So Dogen wrote in a text called Kie Bupo Sobo, Refuge in the Treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. He said, becoming a disciple of the Buddha always depends upon the three refuges. Taking the precepts depends on having taken the three refuges. Again, becoming a disciple of the Buddha always depends on the three refuges. Taking the precepts depends on having taken the three refuges. So essentially, Dogen is saying, if you don't take refuge in the three treasures, you are not a follower of Buddhism. You may have taken the precepts, but the refuges is what defines us as Buddhists. So why would he say this? If you look at the precepts, they are good advice for all people to follow. In fact, most ethically conscientious people strive to call what we Buddhists refer to as the precepts in some form. All moral folks who want to create a harmonious life with others are practicing the precepts. They are practicing these admonitions. They may not call it that, but that these are the guidelines for harmonious living together. But Dogen says that whenever you take up the precepts in Buddhism, the refuges are always part of that vow. So they are not separate. Whenever we take the precepts, we also begin with the three refuges, the three Dharma treasures. We do this in the Jukai ceremony, we do it in the Tokudo, the priest ordination, and we do it in the Bodhisattva ceremony, which we're going to do after the lecture. So all of these include the recitation of Buddha Dharma, taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And in the Bodhisattva ceremony, the refuges are done with a special kind of chant rhythm called Shomyo. This is the most formal part of the ceremony, and it is directly followed by the precepts. So why are these refuges so important? When we look at the three aspects of the refuges, they're actually a definition of living Buddhist practice. So this Buddha mind, our Buddha nature, is the driver and enactment of reality's altruistic nature. We take refuge in that. And we rely upon our own innate Buddha nature or Buddha mind as it is within and without us. So it's this nature within us that nudges us to practice. We say in Buddhism that it is our Buddha mind already there, our innate nature, that encourages us, that brings to mind this practice, the desire to practice. It's like a perpetual motion machine. You have the thought to practice. You are suffering, you have the thought to practice. You practice, which creates more practice, which creates and resonates with the Dharma. So sometimes many of us have had the experience when we first start to practice, we go to a Buddhist lecture, especially a Zen one, and we don't have the slightest idea what's going on. We don't know what the speaker's talking about. But something calls us to continue to listen. What is it? This Buddha mind, this Buddha nature, is what calls us to listen, what calls us to practice. It is particular to us and particular to all being and all beings simultaneously. It is not just residing within each of us, but it resides as the whole of reality itself. It's what makes this universal function happen together, intimately, causally. It is what we call Buddha mind or Buddha nature. So this Dharma, this teaching is what we are enacting. It is our basic mode of operation for Buddha nature. Again, it is both inside and outside, never not functioning. Whether we can see it or not, it is the ground we rely upon and the ground from which we use to stand up. Dogen talks about this. He says, this is the ground of our life, of the universe, and it is this very ground that we use to push up, to stand up. So, Sangha is the field in which Buddha nature and the Dharma are enacted. Buddha nature and the Dharma are not different from Sangha. When I began to work with my anger, I was motivated to do this work because of my Buddha nature, because I was suffering. So even when we go away, even when we are unskillful, this Buddha nature or Buddha mind does not go away. So who or what is it that speaks to your heart? Who motivates us to do the hard work, or what motivates us to do the hard work of transformation? In Buddhism, we say it is Buddha as an exemplar, ancestors upon whose shoulders we stand, and our spiritual family. Foremost, it is our altruistic goodness that drives us to respond. It is that that is inspiring us, that is inspired. That is the refuge in Buddha as the perfect teacher. So when I began to deeply want to transform the anger that I was experiencing, I started to read Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva Way. This was at the beginning of my Buddhist practice. At the very beginning of my Buddhist practice, I used to work at San Francisco State University Library. And on my break, I would go up and look at all the Buddhist books up in the stacks. And in particular, I would go and just sort of see what was up there. And one day I saw this really slim little volume. And I checked it, I opened it up, and it was written in verse. And I read a few verses, and they really spoke to me. So I checked it down at the library, and then later I bought a copy of the book. But, you know, actually I didn't really read it. It was sort of like a talisman or something. I just felt this book called to me, like, you should have this book. So I bought a copy of the book. But I knew that I wanted to own it and keep it. And this was my first copy of Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva Way, translated by Stephen Batchelor. So later, at Tassajara, when I was really getting slammed with the reality that my anger was not very workable, I took out this book and started to study it, in particular, chapter 6 on patience, which is the antidote to anger. And I made it into a little book that I carried around in my robe sleeve with me. So here's the little book that I made for myself. The backside is the schedule. It says, for the practice period, it says, Tassajara schedule, fall 1987. So that's when I made this little book. And as you can see, I hand wrote all the verses in this book. So I carried this book around with me in my sleeve, and I studied it when I had time. So I used this book to instruct me and motivate me. I also believe that Shantideva himself was an anger type, so I felt really kinship with him, that if he could be a hard ass with himself, I could be a hard ass with myself. So it became my primer for practice. Shantideva's text is a Dharma Sutra. Shantideva was and is Buddha as ancestor and mentor. This is the practice of Dharma. Shantideva's book is the Dharma. It is a sacred text, especially in Tibetan schools, highly regarded as a guide to practice. But reading the book was not enough. Taking refuge in the Dharma means that you let it guide your life. You allow it to soak into you and intimately take residence in your heart. This is taking refuge in the Dharma as the perfect teaching. And finally, without the Sangha, we cannot practice. You can read sutras, you can read practice manuals, you can read explanations of various Buddhist doctrines. But if you don't interact with others using the teachings, you are not practicing Buddhism. People often work on having an intellectual understanding of the doctrine of emptiness. But if you only have an intellectual understanding and it does not manifest in your practice, if you do not understand that the doctrine of emptiness means to lack inherent existence, which means we are not separate, then you do not understand compassion. Because when things lack inherent existence, we know that they are not separate from us. And from seeing this arises wise empathy, which becomes compassionate, skillful means. Understanding the doctrine of emptiness intellectually is only step number one. We have to put that into practice. If we don't put it into practice, the Dharma means nothing. It's an idea. And where do we put it into practice? We practice it with everyone. We practice it in our own life. And then the Dharma becomes more than just intellectual entertainment. You can't practice in a vacuum. I could have read Shantideva all day long. I could have meditated on how to cultivate patience. But if I didn't internalize it and try it out on someone else and fail and keep working at it, using the ground to get up off the ground, then all that work, all that study didn't matter. Our life is part of this mandala of the world's functioning, especially in our immediate relationships. We must actively engage in this intimacy to find out how we're doing. That's why we say, I take refuge in the Sangha as the perfect life. This Sangha life is a practice field, and it is refuge, shelter, and support. And yes, sometimes it's a hard pill to swallow. Sometimes it isn't all sweetness and light. And that's our practice too. That's putting the Dharma into practice with each other, struggling with each other, finding harmony through applying the Dharma and looking to our ancestors and the teachings to be able to show us how we do that. So essentially, our practice is refuge. I am, you are Buddhas. We as individuals and as a group, with all beings, practice together. It is this shared nature that starts the Dharma wheel in motion. It is this wheel of the Dharma. It is in which we discover the teachings. It is this wheel that begins to percolate in our hearts and minds. And finally, we enact this and we set the wheel in motion. So in this way, the three jewels or the three treasures are practice itself. Without Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, there is no Buddhist practice. Furthermore, to take refuge is faith. It's faith in our own ability. It's faith in those who have gone before us. It is faith in the teachings. It is faith in our family and in our Sangha. And combining these aspects will define and help us to transform unworkable mistakes into a harmonious chorus of relationships. So for this reason, we do not want to abuse or disparage the three refuges. They are the heart and glue of Buddhism. They are the bloodline of the Buddhas and ancestors, the teachings, and the community coursing through the veins of practice. Why would a person misuse or disregard the essence of this life's work and practice? The verse that goes along with this is, to expound the Dharma with this body is foremost. The virtue returns to the ocean of reality. It is unfathomable. We just accept it with respect and gratitude. Here's another translation of the same section. The body is manifested. The Dharma is unfolded, and there is a bridge in the world for crossing over. Their virtue returns to the ocean of all-knowing wisdom. They are unfathomable and should be received with respect and devotion. The first line, to expound the Dharma with this body is foremost, or the other translation is, the body is manifested. So this simply refers to bringing forth the body of Buddha, or to actualize our true nature, our big mind, our Buddha mind. This is the being time in which the three treasures are revealed or expressed, this time, right now, present moment. If we are able to embody and express the Buddha Dharma, then we are also expressing the other nine precepts. So sometimes we call the Buddhas and ancestors' lineage the preceptual bloodline of the Buddha. This precept but bloodline of the Buddha. So this lineage directly expresses expounding the Dharma with this body is foremost. Expounding the Dharma with this body is foremost. The next line is, the Dharma is unfolded and there is a bridge in the world for crossing over. So this line is not part of our version of the Bodhisattva ceremony. It refers to crossing over to realization. The Dharma, reality's function, the pure field of nothing is missing, no this or that, is our intimate integration, integrated life, in which we embody no inherently existing self. In crossing over, we have dropped the small, selfish self, whose first concern is about protecting one's idea of attaining or getting rid of things in order to avoid suffering. Before we cross over, this is the self that is caught in delusion. We are unable to integrate with all factors presencing because we are caught in our delusional goals or ideas. So when the Dharma has unfolded in our heart, then we see and in turn become our true selves. And the bridge becomes apparent to us, this bridge between self and others, and all may cross over into the realm of fully expressing the three treasures. Now, realistically, sometimes we can do this and sometimes we're not able to. And that's why we say there are no, that's why theoretically Suzuki Roshi said, there are no realized beings, just realized moments. So we all have moments of realization. We all have moments where we have crossed over. And we all have moments where we have not crossed over. We all have moments where we can't even see the bridge. And then there are these moments where we spontaneously are on the other side. So, again, going back to the line here, it says, the Dharma is unfolded and there is a bridge in the world for crossing over. So this in the world is where the teachings are embodied and unfold. They appear in the world. This is not a reference to crossing over as leaving the world and entering nirvana after death. This is your world. It's your present experience in the life you're living right now. So in your life right now, in my life right now, in our lives right now, we are building the bridge in our world with our current circumstances and our current relationships. So please, never disregard or disparage your life. The next line is, the virtue returns to the ocean of reality. Or another translation is, their virtue returns to the ocean of all-knowing wisdom. So, virtue in this case would refer to the qualities embodied in a Buddha. It is to expound the Dharma with this body as foremost. So upon crossing over this bridge, we are the bridge. Shantideva wrote in Guide the Bodhisattva Way, "May I be a protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, or a ship for all those who wish to cross the water." And if you want to look for this, it's in chapter 2. Again, may I be a protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, or a ship for all who wish to cross the water. To cross over means that upon attaining that opportunity of realization in each moment, we, upon dropping the small self, return to the ocean of reality. We return to what is already there. We return to the place to which all rivers flow. We return to the place that we have never left. It's said that the ocean does not reject the river's waters that flow into it. The ocean has the capacity to respond and incorporate whatever is entering at any given time. The ocean also understands that all of these rivers entering into the ocean are the life of the ocean. They are not separate. So this ocean, this metaphor of the ocean, is all-knowing wisdom. It is prajnaparamita. It is going beyond this and that, fully harmonizing in the midst of disharmony. This is the virtue. This is the amazing power of I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Final line of this verse is, it is unfathomable. We just accept it with respect and gratitude. The other translation is, they are unfathomable and should be received with respect and devotion. In many ways, we do not understand this path. We don't understand the power of the merging of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We don't understand the power of this one true thing manifest. The Japanese for this, Itai Sanbo, one body, three treasures. So because of that, in light of that, acknowledging our struggles, our suffering, our delusion, our ignorance, let us follow the path of the Buddhas and ancestors as it has been presented to us. Let us have faith in the Dharma as those teachings handed down to us, as embodied realization placed at our doorstep through the generations of wisdom passed down to us. In turn, we make our best effort to pass this wisdom through our deeds, to pass it on through our deeds, and through the heart's karma. This is our effort and practice. We bow, we pay homage, we respect, and express our gratitude to all beings and all being through the three treasures. This is the yoga of respect and gratitude. We bow with our body, our heart, our mind. It say, it is unfathomable. It is the boat of the Sangha carrying the three treasures. The Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are a gem whose worth is beyond calculation. Sailing on this boat, crossing the river, as we grope for the rudder, we don't realize that sitting on the deck of the boat in plain sight is this Dharma chest that holds the jewel. And when we do become aware of it, we cannot see the luster and brilliance of this gem without practicing together. So together we polish this gem that cannot be polished and reveal what was never hidden. Thank you.